It's a Monday means test that is going to mean a lot for a great many. I suspect it's one for posterity. David King, welcome.
Morning, G. Another belter. What a fantastic game. The emotion of all of it. It was hard not to get swept along with it. I mean, we work with Gary, but to see him present the cup was just awesome. His young bloke's in here, Ben, and we talk Melbourne every week when we come in. He's been the most nervous man in Australia. I really enjoyed the coming along with the Melbourne fans. The Dogs, it wasn't the same emotion. Okay, it's a grand final and you're hoping to win them, obviously, but they'd sort of had this type of emotional build-up 5 years ago. So it just, I don't know, I think if you're a neutral, you just couldn't help but get swept along by the constant Melbourne emotional feedback on social media or friends or people you work with. That was just fantastic.
We've been blessed to have these droughts end. Sydney, Geelong, Bulldogs, Richmond, Melbourne. And I think there is that craving today is let St Kilda have this moment in the not too distant future as well because of what it means to people.
But this is the argument that I have, and we get in trouble for making these comments, but sometimes the part of the journey, the struggle in its infancy makes it worthwhile. Like if you just win one every X amount of years, it doesn't mean as much. So when you get things wrong and you go back to the drawing board and rebuild again, it's terrible. It's awful as a fan and you hate it at the time. But then when you do get to this point, you say, oh, this is what people have been talking about. This is why winning a flag as a fan is so good. Oh, I've never felt this way. I've never experienced the nervousness of another finals campaign, the heartbreak of the failed campaign that always leads you into premiership success. You know, so if you're the Saints, or that this is part of the journey. If you're the Kangas, if you're whoever else is down the bottom, look, the Gold Coast Suns their fans can't see anything coming. You know, GWS fans go, oh, we've had so much heartbreak and we've been so good. This is part of it. This is why it is so good when you win one.
So what's at the core of it for you? We play big themes here and then we're going to go quarter by quarter. So less about the game and more about the overall, what Melbourne has put together and what we've seen reveal itself in the earliest stages of this season and then come to full fruition on Saturday night.
So the best bits, is that where you're getting to? I couldn't. It's funny where your sort of mind takes you when you watch a win like this. And I think when you win premierships, you've got to talk about every component at the football club because they're full club. It's a full club involvement. There isn't an area of your club that you say, oh, we don't. It doesn't really matter if we get that right. So you're talking strength and conditioning, list build. Not just your list build in terms of your draft, but picking the eyes out of those that are available for free agents, the right trades at the right times. So never getting ahead of. Yeah, ahead of the curve, ahead of where you are. No missteps, if you like. So that's a committee decision. There's probably eight or nine names or people that are involved in those sort of conversations. Then you've got to get your leadership right, and then you've got to get your game plan right, and then you've got to want to play team footy. So all those things sound easy. They sound really easy. And Jono talks a lot with you about this sort of stuff. But you don't know until you know. Sometimes you think you're trying and then you see the next level trying and you go, oh, hang on. You think you're leading in the right manner. Then you see it and you go, oh, hang on, that's what it is. Okay, right. Now I know what you're talking about. You know, you talk Jack Riewoldt. Jack Riewoldt changed as a person, as a leader over the last 5-6 years and he's a different product to what we saw for the first 6 years. So that sort of thing has happened at Melbourne. And I think you've got there's a couple of names that are getting lost in all of this. I think that the appointment of Paul Roos to just steady the ship years ago, eight years ago, to just say this is going to take time. Let's not rush. And he talked about building their percentage from 54 to 70 or something in a year. And people went, oh, hang on. Don't worry about percentage. When are the wins coming? When are we playing finals?
Yep.
So to strip it right back, get the recruiting right, teach the players how to play, teach them how to win contested footy. I think Brendan McCartney needs some credit here. He's had his fingerprints on these contested possession bulls. And those lessons never leave you.
Yep.
And then you add the layers. Adam Uzay comes in and says, hey, instead of, you win the ball, great, but instead of quick kicking it, how about you step out of traffic? How about we do a bit more? How about we be the better version of what you are, Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, Harms. Step out of traffic. The young ruckman, Jackson, he did it four or five times. So there's not an area of the club you shouldn't talk about. So I think you've got to go right back. This has been eight years in the making.
And we've never really had a grand final like that before, have we?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was so good. The first quarter, you thought, oh, Melbourne, this is... We talk about the system of the game. So Melbourne holding a player behind the ball, the holding advantage versus the Dogs' rolling advantage. They had the plus one around the football. So it didn't matter how many times the Dogs won it. They gave it back. They kept giving it back. And I'm thinking, well, this is what Melbourne want. They want to stay set behind the footy and then just keep coming at you. So they set up their lead playing the way they play. And I thought, oh, this could get really ugly on the score. But then all of a sudden the Dogs come back and you go, wow, how good's this? Star factor performances everywhere. Look, the Stars really turned up, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
We'll get to the specifics of them later. But, you know, to see the big names put it together on the biggest stage for both teams, we had high scoring. The game lived in contest. If you couldn't compete, you were gone. And we'll get to some of those guys as well later on. I mean, it's all well and good to talk about what Melbourne did in that 16 goals, 4-1, goal one, but a lot of this stuff happened at an area where the Dogs knew they had a problem. At the coalface, at stoppage, young ruckman exposed again. You know, you know what you know. You've got no knowns coming into these games, and it was exposed on the biggest of stage. We will now talk about Max Gawn as an icon of this footy club. So it was Max's graduation day for me. Like, he's going to be a revered figure now at Melbourne. He's been a large part of the reason why they're here. And I know we had a caller last week, and I agree, we don't talk about Nathan Jones the same way, because this has been Max's cultural shift. So that's sort of where my mind was going. And then for some weird reason, Jared, the father-son got ticked off for me on the way. I mean, it had a different component, having Jack Viney with the hooks back to the Todd Viney era.
Yes.
The whole Melbourne Pass players sort of lived through that, and a little bit through Gary Lyon, who was there. It was just the perfect time to have Gary in Perth to connect all the parts of the fans that were 70 years of age and 15 years of age. I just thought it was just perfect.
So I'll give you a couple of what they got right and what they got wrong before we delve into our quarter by quarter.
Yep.
So I'm going to call this the prophecy.
Oh,
so
okay.
We have been so lucky to have Craig Jennings as part of this program for the last couple of years to give you derivative thinking, to open imagination. But the one thing he believes in is you've got to see it early. So I went back through our notes, and as far back as round two, he had Melbourne as the team. But this was from June 10.
And so Melbourne... if you're going to win a premiership this year, you have to get through them. I start with the players that in each area of the ground have an impact on the other five players around them. In the midfield, it's Petrarca for me. So he's the Dusty Martin. And I just believe if you don't find a way to stop him now, because what he does, he impacts when it counts. And that's the important thing. He's dynamic. He's going to start winning Norm Smith's.
So that was the flag and the Norm Smith medal on June 10. So Geno's father was a card counter. Geno's a shark, I reckon.
Now, Geno's, it's been great listening. It really has. And how he's not in AFL football, it just amazes me. But
clubs are surely waking up to that way of thinking to add to your mix.
Worked with a lot of people in footy and spoken with a lot of people in footy, and a lot of them just say the same things, Jared. You don't want same at your football club. Have a look at Melbourne. Tell me what's same about Melbourne that's ever else. Nothing. They're a different bunch, and they love being different.
What they got right, so that's the time slot for me. It's the 5 o'clock time slot. Start in natural light, drift into the evening, present the cup under lights.
Don't know about that.
So that's it for me, but I don't want to fight with anyone today. So that's it. But you can't deny that there is the biggest audience for the game is there at night. And that's there again. It's factual. It's statistical. To argue the inverse is to argue literally that night is day. So if you want your biggest audience, the game goes at night. I happily sit in the twilight. My compromise is I would happily have one in four grand finals travel to the country, they can be the night grand finals. And the three MCG grand finals out of four can be in the afternoon. So we can protect the tradition there whilst delivering. Like if Perth would be 16 years away from its next grand final and they would start counting the days today. And Adelaide, I feel for the people of South Australia, they're not going to get that. It's that deal shackles the national game. What they got wrong, I'd like you to take this back to your friends at Champion Data. Removing a possession post-match is poor practice.
No, it's not, no.
So Steve Smith scores a century. And then in the aftermath, we go and go, oh, do you know what? He didn't tickle that one to fine leg. It was a leg by. Ump called it as a run. He made 100. No, he made 99. So 20 minutes after the day's play, we go, oh, no, Steve Smith didn't make a century. Bat raised to all corners of the ground. He only made 99.
Oh, Jared.
No, that's the like for like.
No, it's not.
Of course it is. Petrarca broke the record for possessions with a hand pass in the centre of the ground for 40.
Do you like the...
And then he got docked a possession in the post-match.
Well, what if it wasn't his possession, Jared?
It doesn't matter. In the moment that it happens, if it counted, it counted.
No, but you're asking...
You're searching for perfection in the aftermath.
We've got goal review, haven't we? Don't we surf...
How did that go on the weekend?
Well, you talk about it every week. That was awful on the weekend, by the way. But look, I think if you're going to talk about records, then they've got to be correct.
So are you happy with Steve Smith? We're going to dock you a run for a leg by and take your 100 away from you and make it 99? Because that's what we did.
No, we didn't.
Of course we did. He broke the record. Break the record.
Steve Smith standing at the other end, there's no confusion as to who's batting. It's Steve Smith. There's 15 players within 10 metres, Jared. So if someone who's calling a stat in the run from 80 metres away, level three, calls handball Petrarca, handball Oliver, kick so-and-so, and the guy who's double-checking in the back office to make sure everything's 100% correct because clubs need perfection, they demand it, that's why they pay the dollars, and they say, hang on, correction on that one, wasn't Petrarca, override, it was whoever.
It wasn't, no, it wasn't a handball, we're not going to, the ball fell out of his grasp.
It happens regularly.
This is like an inside edge onto the pads, which is either there or not there, which is scanned.
Yeah, no,
denying him the record.
You got one player betting.
They got that wrong.
You got one player betting.
They got that wrong.
There's no confusion.
We search for the meaning in the 2021 Grand Final, which more than any game I can recall in recent times demanded a second viewing yesterday to fully comprehend it. So we're going to go quarter by quarter, Kingy?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it, Jared. I think you don't miss too much when you do it that way. And you know what? If you're a Melbourne fan, it just lasts a little bit longer. Doing it quarter by quarter and have a look at what worked because the game did swing wildly. So I think you can be a bit flippant and just say, oh, it was 1 in 40 seconds in the third quarter there and miss what happened in the absolute arm wrestle.
All right, let's go to the opening term.
Off to Treloar and up to Dunkley, who got ankle tapped. Through come the D's, Rivers to Salem, low down inside the 50. Petrarca off a step, swings at a goal and nails the first. The most beautiful kick from the arc. Immaculately groomed, ruthlessly effective from point blank range. Bailey Fritsch puts through the Demons second.
McRae, Will of the West, got it away. High ball, Liberatore lands 30 out from goal. Rooksmith didn't mark, but he found a passage through. And the Dogs are on the board from the most unexpected source. Bailey Williams needs a true bounce because Pickett was right there ready to pounce. He just was able to tap it and enlist Duray. Oh, horrible turnover. It presented a rather simple goal. And Spargo runs it in. A calamity deep for the Dogs. Old Dunkley miskick though, turns it back to Melbourne. Bowie to centre half forward to Harms. And then the kick was placed. Oh, another fumble from Williams. A nightmare first quarter. Fritsch runs in on open goal and makes no mistake.
At quarter time, it was the Demons by 21 points, 4-5-29 to the Bulldogs, 1-2-8.
So let's have a look at why you score. And this is probably where we're getting to. A bit of a deeper look at it, Jerry, because if you just want to look at it basically, and just keep the themes in your mind. Dogs want the rolling plus one, an extra at all stoppages, and then you stay in that general play movement. So as the ball moves 20 metres to the left, that extra's going with it. As it moves 20 metres to the right, that extra's going with it. Melbourne hold the loose behind the ball. So looking at the way Melbourne scored, okay, it's simple stuff. It's get the ball in your forward line and pressure. I think the first quarter of Cozzy Pickett, despite the fact he hardly had possession, was enormous.
He spooked them.
He did. He was involved in that hustle on Jure. And then if you look at how deep the pressure starts, he's one step off the 50-metre arc when he's breaking into the 50 to put pressure on. He knows he's not going to get reward, but he still goes. And then the others come in behind him. So it's almost like these smalls in Neil Bullen, Pickett, and Spargo are the first line of defence at all times. But they know coming behind them are the midfield wave or that high half forward wave. He was responsible for the first goal, and you thought straight away, okay, how are they doing this? And how they did it. And Caleb Daniel get a lot of credit for his disposal in the first quarter. And he did win the ball back for them. So I'm not denigrating the way he played. Okay. He had 12 disposals and 5 of those were intercepts. So the 5 intercepts, double tick. Fantastic. But his 12 disposals, and on quite a few occasions, he was the extra around the stoppage. He kicked it back to the extra for Melbourne. So it sort of negated his influence in the game, and it gave Melbourne, as a system, their game. And I thought that a player like Daniel, they probably demanded more from his disposals than what he gave. So to me, that was really disappointing. I was really concerned in the first quarter when Bailey Williams was frozen when he got the ball a couple of times, gifted the ball back, goal, and then he dropped that mark. And I sort of thought, oh, this is over. You know, the moments like that, you know, when you whether you are concerned about what's coming and you do have that timid moment, moments like that in grand finals, to me, they permeate through the group, and I thought they're in trouble here. So in one way, they did a great job, the Dogs, to just stay afloat.
Yep.
To stay with them.
They were so poor out coming out of defence in the opening term. So Dale out on the full, Cordy blazes for insufficient intent, the two Williams moments, Daniel a floater, which is a straight turnover, Dunkley a horrible hat kick out of defensive 50 turnover, Daniel and Dale again. That's too many. And, you know, 21 points, they were lucky to be 21 points down the flow of those.
So you've got it's more of what we know. This is what I keep saying. This is who are these teams? What do we know? So what do we know about Melbourne? Great defensive 50. So they concede 16 inside 50s for the quarter, which is a lot. Against Melbourne, you're talking 64 for a game. That's a big number. So that'd be a huge tick for the Dogs. I think we can win with that. They kick one goal, and that's because of the way Melbourne get that support immediately. They have 25 intercepts for the quarter, which is probably 25% more than they'd normally have, the Demons. So under full pressure, being outnumbered at the source, but still being able to force error. And then Petrarca getting involved, 10 disposals, 8 of them contested. He kicks that big one-step goal. I mean, that was huge. Mm. It was like a sweet little punched two-iron. It just kept going. We've talked about Pickett. I thought Christian Salem, I don't know if he's been given the credit that he deserves for his game. And I thought early, when everything was happening quickly, he had the ability to slow the game down. Yep. and really stay composed. He had 9 disposals, 4 of those were intercepts. So it was almost like it was the game of Daniel versus the game of Salem, but Salem had the poise. So when he got it, he made sure that they hung on to it and that the Dogs bled. So he was so calm in the chaos of footy. And then the rest of the numbers are just numbers for me. But Oliver was good.
So I had Oliver intercept mark in defensive 50, runs down Bailey Smith, great again off halfback under Heat, working both ends. I was struck by Oliver's first term on the replay, having just, you know, he was in the action in the call, but I was struck by his quarter looking back on it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, Dunkley and Daniel had 12 disposals for the quarter, but I'd take McRae's 10. I thought his 10 was really good. Angles, smarts, good vision. So the Dogs were doing a lot right, but the fundamental of how they play, the plus one at the footy, wasn't working. And alarm bells were going off for me thinking, hang on, this is going so far down Melbourne's path, it's not funny. And the score, not because of the scores, because of how they got the scores rolling. And the Dogs didn't have dominant numbers around contest and around clearance. And if that's your investment, if that's where you're spending your extra player, then you need to get a return there. So I just thought that at quarter time, not so much the scoreboard, it wasn't out of control. It was still relatively in handle. But I just thought if this game continues like this, it'll leak out to a 5-goal margin, it'll leak out to a 7-goal margin, and you just don't score against Melbourne.
Yep. And in terms of inverse moments, so Waitman has a fly to ball on the goal line, drops the mark, cannons into the post, and then the very next play, Fritsch takes his mark on the goal line and they get the goal. I mean, you just like for like moments. One captured for a goal, one spilt not.
I've watched this game a couple of times, as you would have, Jared. So we talked about this last week. We had a couple of players that were considered unstoppable. Okay, if they got rolling, what do you do? Now, Norton was one of those guys. Again, they've had 16 inside 50s, zero targets to Norton. Now, I've gone back and just watched him. I think it's more on him than it is the team. Like he played on what we now know was a guy with a torn hamstring. Not once did he expose him on long leads, on figure eight leads, on constant engagement, constant concern. He just stood with him. They stood and just pushed each other. I mean, if you've got a torn hamstring, that is gold. So he never exposed that.
Yep.
We didn't know watching the game how severe it was because it was never challenged. It was never exposed. So 16 entries for the quarter, 4 of them go to Shacky, 2 of them go to Jason Johannesson. I mean, if you'd have told me that 6 weeks ago, hey, you have 16 in the first quarter of the grand final, and you're thinking, okay, who do you want to kick them to? Well, why isn't Norton your prime?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was a real opportunity lost. But again, to get the 16, double tick, but nothing to show.
Who did you give your votes to in the opening term?
I thought the best on ground the first quarter was Christian Salem. I thought his ability to see through the red mist that Gary Lyon had talked about on the couch regularly, you know, in the absolute panic of footy, what do you see? You know, he was able to just play with a calmness that allowed them to get through. Christian Petrarca was, you know, was big when he had to be. 8 contested possessions and that one-step goal. And I gave Daniel one vote. I thought he was third best, just in front of a couple of others, because of his intercept game, not so much, you know, his ball in hand was as much a problem as it was the cure. But I still thought he was pretty significant.
I was 3 Salem, 2 Oliver and 1 Petrarca as my 3 from the opening
team.
Yeah,
well, that's why we have many people voting, Jared.
So we both had Salem as the best player on the ground at quarter time. The Dogs fight back in the second term, coming up next on our grand final recap edition of the Monday Men's Test.
Who's there underneath? Dunkley couldn't do anything with it. Lever lost it. Treloar's into the fray. Stole it and goaled it. Paddled it out to the side for Hunter. Wide out. 45 from goal to the hot spot. Through Treloar's hands. Norton tries. Petty. Run down. Hand pass. Treloar again. Treloar's the centre of everything in the fight back.
No purchase at all. And suddenly Treloar facilitates the run at Bontempelli. His kick went through the fingers of Johannesson. Oh. But it's grabbed by Norton. They've kicked a third in no time at all. Dunkley, an unlikely long target. The kick's going to drop short for Norton. He's running in front. It's the Bont. Who else put the Bont? Now the conversion for Marcus Bontempelli. 20 metres out. He slots it. Oh, it's a different game, this grand final in the second.
Wide out at the defensive 50 and then go long down the line. And Bont is serving there as well. Another fine overhead grab.
Can kick the ball deep for the Bulldogs. Didn't get all of it. It's high from the side. Hannon from the front. Who else but the Bont? Marcus Bontempelli leads from the front. Stares it down and puts it through. And the Western Bulldogs are going to take the lead into halftime.
They kicked 6 goals, 3 to 1 goal for the Bulldogs in the second term, and they led by 8 points, and bar for Lockie Hunter's miss at the end, it might have been 13. David King, where was your eye drawn in the second quarter?
Well, you're looking for the coach to do something, and he leans on Adam Treloar, throws him into the absolute middle. So he goes in at centre bounces and has an immediate impact, which is exactly why you go and get these guys and why they're such high-priced commodities, you know, and you give up the world to get them if you have to, because they swing big games. His influence on that next 10 minutes of football was, for me, it threatened to be the reason. This is the reason. This guy is out of control, and he's doing it off their best. He's doing it off Oliver. He's doing it off Petrarca. So he's challenging them now to come the other way, and they didn't. There's a passage of play where he kicks his second goal, Treloar, where he runs from the half-back flank of the Dogs and tracks all the way, and Oliver can't go with him. He actually has to make a decision in the end that this is a waste of my time trying to pick up this 20 metres. I can't make up ground. And he stops. He basically stops. So this was a fascinating view this second term. And, you know, we talk about Aaron Norton in the first quarter. So he's not moving. He's unsighted. He's not targeted. What's going on? And then he has a hand in the first three goals. So the ball comes to ground because of Norton's contest at the top of the goal square. That's Treloar's first. Then some clever work at ground level, again from Norton. He's targeted, then he sort of follows up. He's in the area, ball bobbling, bang, Treloar snap goal again. So Treloar, as I said, comes 90 metres to get that one. Then Norton is almost not leading. This is part of my frustration with this guy. So Johannesson's on the burst, leading out as a full forward should. Through his hands, Norton snaps an unbelievable right footer. And you think, gee, they're away here. The energy's high, crowd going crazy, midfield on top. Okay, they've corrected that first quarter problem. Then you wonder what's happening here. What's going on? The dogs then fall into this pressure game with Melbourne for the back half of the quarter. For the next sort of 15 minutes, nothing happened. It was high pressure. It was high intensity. I get all of that, but I just wondered whether they could keep going, whether they could keep, you know, this momentum, this high energy, high speed game, and challenge the Demon mids to engage the other way. Hard to do, difficult to do, but they got such reward. They're back in the game at sort of the 10-minute mark, 11-minute mark of that second term. They're back in the game, Jared.
So Bontempelli turns in one of the great grand final quarters, I think. So the fuse is lit by Treloar and Bontempelli picks it up. He's striding out of the middle and bouncing. He's coming backward into packs and taking marks. He's in from the side and he's kicking his goals. So that package, and you talk about the legacy piece that was on offer, is Bontempelli lays his claim to legacy in that second term.
Yeah. So can the one where Bont takes two bounces out of the centre bounce, I want you to watch it again tonight. It's 16:50 on the clock. That's what I'm talking. This is why Luke Beveridge has to get Dermot Brereton to the Witten Oval in the off-season with Aaron Norton. If he's going to be your full forward, the timing of all of those moves that he has to make to allow Bontempelli a quality target to hit, if he's as he's taking those two bounds, I've watched it twice.
Yep.
He doesn't move. So that's a goal there for Norton. Now, in the end, he gets the goal. In the end, they get an opportunity, but it's not repeatable. It should be, this is a goal because of us. Like, yep, we saw when Melbourne got rolling, everything's in full motion, everything's in flow. So probably the most impressive part of the day for me was their fifth goal, was where they were just held up a little bit and they just dropped into a little bit of control game, the Dogs. Chip. Now, Melbourne don't let you through. This is what we see. If you play a slow game against the Ds, they drop into this grid and they just slowly defeat you, okay? So they go chip, chip, chip. And then Shaqy takes a big contested mark down the wing against Lever. And you go, oh, hang on. Not only are you defeating Lever,
yep,
you've got a contested marker. This is a little bit of where they've been. We saw this last week. Okay, then what happens now? Bang, then they drive it in. And Bont has the half-forward type matchup against Salem. That's where he drifts in and marks the ball. So he's a midfielder, has somehow got the half-back matchup. So what Bont does, and we talk about his footy IQ, being able to just dictate who the matchups are at stoppage, and all of a sudden he gets a guy that should never be his matchup. Nominally on a whiteboard, you'd never have your halfback flanker versus Bont, but he does it again. And you think, this is all falling into place. So, yeah, a lot of their opportunities were those secondary opportunities inside 50. You know, there's the spilt ball where Hunter gets the high tackle from Spargo. Then Bont has an amazing ability again at the back end of the quarter to take Viney forward. So when he gets the mismatch as a midfielder, he drags him forward. So there's so much going on in this game that you sort of had to sit back and say, what's really important? You're spot on. Bontempelli was the reason. I think that the shot at goal from Max Gawn will be the most reviewed point in history, Jared. That was a goal every day of the week.
Anthony Rocker.
Yeah. Look, it would have been much talked about if the game hadn't have been the blowout it was.
So in my notes, actually scattered through the first and the second quarter, Rourke Smith is excellent.
Yeah.
I think he has half a dozen really influential moments and contest as well as with the ball. Bowie halves a one-on-one against Waitman, which is a critical moment. So he has a good moment. I really like Gorn's game against the flow in that second quarter. It's probably the most influential he is in the game, I thought. It's just looking back at it, as if there was someone to stand against it, it was Gorn. But the Bontempelli quarter. And then Petrarca answers that as we go along.
Well, the Dogs got the Demons into unfamiliar territory. You never kick six goals from 13 entries against the Ds. They got Lever outmarked on the wing, as I said. They're getting those secondary opportunities. They're getting mismatches with Bont, whether it's a small mid getting dragged to fullback or it's a halfback flanker getting taken into contested marking backs. Things have not just turned in terms of the scoreboard. Look a bit deeper at why they turned. Luke Jackson was doing some things.
Yes, yeah.
Like you just start to see, oh, hang on, he's getting around the ground. His ground level stuff is ridiculous, really. But some of his subtle taps, he puts his body in the way a few times to allow a teammate a clear path. As I said, Petrarca was still thereabouts, but everything's contested for him at the moment. 8 disposals, pretty much all of them contested. Bont was the reason. Treloar probably lit the fire. That's the story of the second quarter, really.
Who are your votes in the second quarter?
Oh, the three was a give. It was an easy one, wasn't it? Bont was the three. I thought Treloar to turn the fortunes of this midfield was enormous. The first 10 minutes gave him two. And Caleb Daniel, well, he cleaned up his skills a little bit and was still getting plenty of ball.
Yeah, I went 3 Bontempelli, 2 Treloar. And I gave 1 to Gorn in that second quarter. So at halftime, it's the Dogs by 8 as we pick through this quarter by quarter.
55 out! Oh, Joe Henderson has taken the mark! He's flown the pack right next to the behind by the goalpost and dragged down a fantastic grab. Can he finish it? The Norm Smith medalist from 2016. Crowd tells you that he can. Bailey Williams, he sends the chance to get through. Bontempelli! Simply the Bont! He's kicked his third! Marcus Bontempelli has taken the Bulldogs to a 19-point lead.
Just 2 goals for the season. Angus Brayshaw angled to the left from 40 metres out. Hit it sweet. Brayshaw propels the Demons back to the lead.
Ben Brown, no one really knew whether to fly or not. Petrarca! Christian Petrarca! Rises to the moment. He's dribbled one from the pocket. Still 25 seconds to go. And it's again a trademark Demon release. Jackson Oliver. Straight through the middle for another one. It's a procession of possessions and goals. It is a devastating run before three-quarter time.
The Bulldogs had led by 19 points in the middle stages of the third term. Melbourne 24-point leaders at the final break, 7-3 to 2 straight. It's 12-11-83 to 9-5-59. If ever there was a quarter of two halves, David King, this is it.
Well, the first, 15 minutes was the Dogs playing methodical chip football in full control and getting not a lot of scoreboard reward, but enough. I mean, Melbourne weren't scoring. Their extra was working. All the things we talk about, okay. What's the game mapping out like? I just thought they were in full control there for a while. The Ds were winning stoppage. It was sort of funny how it was playing out. So they were winning stoppage, which was the reverse of what we thought, given the investment of the Dogs. But they couldn't get through. The Dogs' pressure in that first 15 minutes was 238. Now the magic 200 is if you can hold a 200 for a game, you don't lose.
Yep.
So to sit at 238 for 15 minutes of football just shows that the game is, even though the contested possession numbers might not be high, and we've got a little bit of feedback on the text, the actual contest, the pressure of the contest was big. And I think both sides were aware of the importance of the premiership quarter. They knew that this is it. They've had their turn first quarter. Dogs have had theirs in the second. What do we get in the third? So the first 15 minutes, well done. And a credit to them. But then when it turned, Jared, like I can't recall seeing a period like it. The Demons kicked 7 goals from 10 entries. Now, I know the old 666 was the Devil's number. I think it's the Demon's number.
Yep.
I think those centre bounces, you can't change anything. You can't alter a lot. You can change personnel. But outside of that, you're stuck with your 6 defenders. You can't roll a 7th back. You can't roll another one to the wing. You can't have someone come off the back of the square. You're stuck playing the way you want to play. So when you see the Demons go on this run, you got the boundary throw in where Viney goes flat out the football off McRae, brute force. Fritch marks on the lead. Then you got this clearance game at centre bounce, where they continually come out the front, and that's a disaster for any back six to see someone coming out pure at the front of a centre bounce clearance, right through the middle, not wide, right through the absolute corridor.
So it was shades of Chris Judd.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 100% it was. So in this period, Jackson was the one in the ruck.
In all 4 centre clearance goals, it's Jackson in the ruck.
All 5 stoppage goals were Jackson. So this was more than just Petrarca and Oliver and Viney and those guys, but clearly they're the ones carrying the footy. Liberatore left the front door open too regularly. You know, he was the sweeper that took a false move or engaged in a tackle attempt or a loose ball attempt that he didn't get to or didn't seize. And then this is what we talked last week about, the leg drive of the Melbourne midfielders, that they're no longer are they happy just getting the ball and handballing or taking territory. They want blood. So when you see Petrarca drive for 3 steps, it's not the fact that it's him getting out. It's the fact that riding shotgun next to him, Jackson, next to him, Oliver, next to him, it's a wave.
Yes.
So when you don't dispose the ball immediately, you can engage as a midfield and create maximum damage. And that's what they did. You know, I just thought that the power in the way they scored goals was just terrific. If you want to talk about the Western Bulldogs in this, okay, I mean, English is a problem they've known about for a while as a ruckman, okay? But I've watched the Geelong Football Club meander along for 8 to 10 years without a ruckman. So you've got to make a call. Luke Beveridge has got to make a call here. Is this the guy? Because what he did in the ruck was uncompetitive. The biggest stakes in a grand final, this 5-minute burst that was ruining the game. Are you going to put up? Are you going to live with that? Are you going to put up with that? Because I think you've got to make a call. And okay, they go and get Steph Martin at the back end of last year, but that's a short-term fix. That's not a long-term solution. So do you need to look at this? Is he one name you can throw up for trade? They've got to get better in this area. He's not going to get much better as what you're seeing now. He's a known product now in the ruck. And teams are lining up to attack and go hard and try and challenge those at ground level without the extra number at centre bounce. You don't get that luxury, so tactically you can't really change much. So there's big problems for the Dogs here. They know it now. They've seen it on the biggest stage. They must act.
So a few players. Bailey Williams has a really good quarter after his shaky first term, particularly in the phase while the Bulldogs are holding sway. DeRay, he serves bravely, cleaned up twice. Pickett, who clears the way for Petrarca with the bump on Dunkley, which allows him the time to create the curler, and it goes in. Jackson's wicked change of direction to be able to set up the Oliver goal gives you an insight into his athleticism. I think Rourke Smith has moments in this term as well. Bontempelli's on the bench through that fateful first phase of the 114 seconds. That's when he's taking his breather and the 3 clearances are lost and all of them result in goals. And just the one where Harms, so that boundary throw in, Bailey Smith fumbles. So he has first access and he fumbles.
Yep.
And Smith grabs it, Harms grabs it. And to his eternal credit, he doesn't just blaze. He sets the ball to the fat side pocket for Fritch to be able to run onto. Because in that heat, Harms has every right just to thrash that onto his boot, and it lands wherever it lands. But that is some sort of kick from the coalface that Fritch can't help but mark it.
When they needed something. Yep. They were in a bit of trouble. They couldn't get their game going. So to have the scoreboard tick over in that fashion, so to convert that opportunity. So they're little markers that just build pressure.
Yep.
So that Look at some of the moments, okay? Some of the moments. So if you're watching this quarter again, I want you to look for leg drive. I want you to look at those guys bursting out. You know, Oliver, so good in tight. Petrarca, so good. Jackson, subtle touches, blocks. Caleb Daniel, Steph Martin gets a free kick or a mark deep down back pocket, and it's in motion. It's in real time. And Martin just turns to the voice of Daniel and gives him the footy straight away. The Dogs needed time. They'd played a patient game before that. And they scored two goals for the first 15 minutes to nothing. And it had worked for them. But Daniel wanted the footy. So he gave him the footy. They weren't set up for it. They weren't ready ahead of the ball because it was so quick. So the scrubber kicks turned over. And then we see Brayshaw run back in that same play and take that courageous mark. And I compare that to Bailey Williams in the first quarter. And I say, that's the difference.
Yep.
That's the same spot on the ground, and you get two different moments, and you say, we are on here. He goes back, he kicks the goal. So he caps his work, and you think, if I'm a Melbourne player, I'm starting to lift. You know, I'm starting to feel, okay, this is ours now. It's our time. What can I do now? The Petrarca dribble kick, you'll show it tonight. And I'm not bashing Tim English, right? But when you're that size and the ball's hanging in the air like that, you take that pack out and you spoil that ball. The effort in that marking contest was as poor as I've seen. And once you see it, you can't stop seeing it.
Yep.
You know, the finish is brilliant. You know, Wood leaves Petrarca for some reason. Easton Wood didn't have a great day. He's been an unbelievable player, so I'm not potting him. But he left the most damaging player on the ground at ground level to go and bump Max Gawn. Like, what for? So, you know, see the job through, play your role as a small defender. At that point, he was a small defender. Yep. Didn't get it done. Too many mistakes. Cough up goals.
Brayshaw's quarter was just outstanding. He wore those two early hits. And every time he got it, he's in my notes. I've got the one what if.
Oh.
The one what if is Melbourne have just gone to the lead, 64-59. Rourke Smith kicks a ball inside 50, and Shacky gets cannoned into by Brayshaw. It's 100% a free kick. Like 100%. It's not debatable in any way. The umpire's on the spot to say it doesn't blow the whistle. The players even stop. Like, it was just so crude.
Mm.
If Shacky gets to go back and kick that goal, we're between 3 and 4 minutes to go in that term, and the Bulldogs lead by a point. The margin is not 24 at three-quarter time. That's my only sliding doors moment.
Yeah.
Is that free kick has to be paid, and it does give the one push against momentum, which is just overwhelming. They get this one look, and who's to say whether he would have kicked it or not? That was my one what if in the quarter.
No, I like that, but there was a moment, I would have been within the next, if it wasn't the 2 minutes after, it was the 2 minutes before, where Cozzy Pickett should have got a free kick for head high in the forward line at the other end. So there was a lot missed, put it that way. But when you look at four centre bounce goals, you just don't see that in a quarter of football. You know, the average is 10 points per team per game. So amazingly, they finished with 7-3 from centre bounce clearances.
Yes.
7-3 in a grand final.
Yep.
Best versus best. Unbelievable.
Give me your votes from the third quarter.
Votes for the quarter. Petrarca was huge, 10 disposals, 5 of those become scores. He kicked his own goal. He was part of the wrecking crew in the centre bounce. Brayshaw was the two for me. I thought Brayshaw, Oliver Jackson, they were all pretty big, but Brayshaw's run back with a flight was a game changer.
Yep.
Was a real moment you can cling to. I gave one to Jackson. I could have given it to May. I thought some of his spoils, if you watch this quarter again, some of his spoiling and his intercept mark work, I think he only took one or two, but it was just crucial when they were in a little bit of trouble. The game was starting to slide. I thought his defensive stuff was really good. And now knowing about the hamstring, that elevates even more. He probably should get a vote. Fritz was solid. Kicked a couple of goals. You know, conversion good. But I'd have three Petrarca, 2 Brayshaw, 1 Jackson.
Yeah, I'm 3 Petrarca, 2 Oliver, 1 Brayshaw in that
voting
term.
Oliver.
He was the player I was struck by on the replay.
Hangover from the Brownlow, isn't it?
No, I just thought... on the night, he didn't grab me as much as he did watching it yesterday. Yeah. I thought his first and third quarters were exceptional. So into the last quarter, it's 24 points as it starts.
Gives it to Neil Bullen, trickles the ball for Sparrow. He's got into space again. He loops at the 50, sets it up for Big Ben Brown. He takes the mark.
In a parallel universe, Ben Brown would have played the year in the Wooden Spoon team. And here he is about to snap his third in the grand final.
Can he kick a fifth goal? as Jared alluded to, in that most famous of Melbourne jumpers, for Ronald Dale from 40 metres out. He's put it through. Bailey French kicks his fifth and jumps for joy. He too could have been at another club very easily, Alex Neil Bullen. Instead, he's in a grand final. He's maybe sealing this premiership deal.
Jackson goes over, hand pass to Salem. He's sniffing a goal, and he's found it as well. Bailey Fritsch, Mike Sheehan declared him the best 31 since Barras. Bailey Fritsch steers through his sixth in a grand final. A phenomenal performance.
Six goals in a grand final puts him in rare air. So 9-3 to 1-1 in that final term. By the end, it's a 74-point win. Where does your eye go?
Oh, look, I think... So the margin for me is not as... It's not the be-all, end-all. Once you're broken in a grand final, yeah, there's a part of the Dogs sort of giving up a little bit. No one wants to use the terms giving up. Giving up's a bit strong, but they know the result. Once the result's known, it's hard to maintain the rage.
Yep.
And when, in a game like this, when you've got one team absolutely downhill skiing now, they're on top, they're on fire, the big players are stepping up. I just marvel at some of the work of Petrarca. So even his dump kick to set up that first goal, the turn went 55 metres. Jackson at ground level again, just enormous. Fritsch just so lively as a forward. He's on the move all the time. His timing is perfect to find the lead. There'll be some players missed in this. I thought Neil Bullen really showed what his worth is in the last sort of 60 minutes of this game.
Did you find Sparrow in this quarter?
Yeah, Sparrow was very good. Sparrow's a player. There's no doubt. They love him. They just can't get him quite in, you know, full mid-time minutes at the moment. But some of Petrarca's ball use, that squaring ball to McDonald was really smooth and, you know, just pure team first footy. I really loved Salem's game, and I'm glad that he got that goal that you guys just called. But in the end, the margin's the margin. It's absolute conversion at its best. 16 goals, 4 they kicked from late in the third term. So that's just so brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So brutal.
Josh Kay had put out a stat that 100 points hadn't been kicked in the half in a final since 2000, and only once before in a grand final. That was the first half in 72 when Carlton did it. So we have literally never seen this in a grand final.
Right.
We've never seen 100 points kicked in the second half by a team.
So the one that I probably on review look back and see more than I did at the time on first viewing is Ed Langdon.
He's in my votes in this quarter.
Yeah. He had a big quarter, didn't he? But you go back and you watch it and you just see him, you know, coast to coast all day and that power running.
What about the goalie kicks where he is the chain in the back pocket and then he's the lead mark unmanned in the forward pocket because no one can go with him.
Oh, so, you know, I'm not bashing Tim English, but there's a boundary throw in 11 minutes to go. Just some really poor efforts. You know, you can't have poor efforts in a grand final and expect a good result. But let's not go to the dark side. Let's stay with the victors. I thought their total team power running at the end, not just the last quarter, but the back end of the third quarter. You know, and that comes down to your strength and conditioning department. We've all made a big deal of one game in 28 days. They were primed. You know, this is a 12-month process to get to this point. It's a Melbourne Cup style preparation to have them top of the ground on the biggest day in the biggest moments, and they were absolutely top of the ground. So I was blown away with their ability to continually get out the front of stoppages through power. And break tackles. They stepped through, I reckon, 15 tackles in the last 45 minutes of footy. It was strength, power, and still had gut running attached to it. So it was brutal and it was bloody brilliant.
Who were your votes in the last quarter?
Well, Petrarca iced the game. He was terrific in the last term. I thought Langdon got the two for me. Just his continual work rate, and I probably was hard on him in other quarters. And Neil Bullen, I snuck him in for one. I was really thrilled with his last quarter. Adam Treloar had 10 disposals and a goal, and he only played 60% of the last quarter. He spent the last 6 or 7 minutes on the bench. So I could have snuck him in on the losing team.
So I did.
Did you?
I thought he was the only player who was prepared to go the distance against the Avalanche. So I had Petrarca 3, Langdon 2, and Treloar 1. I think it spoke of his character and what he'd said as having felt it once, he would do everything in his power to avoid feeling it again. And he did.
He did.
He lived great. His end of the bargain.
He was awesome.
So in the overall, in the on your Norm Smith sheet, which way did you have them?
Well, if I had to write them down, three Petrarca, he was the standout, and we'd been hoping to see him do that, and we did. And so I think we say thank you, Christian. That was just an outstanding performance of a mix of class and brutality all rolled into one. I thought second best on ground was Christian Salem. You know, I keep talking about those key moments where he could see through the panic and the chaos and be calm enough with the football, be in the right spot to support at all times, roll up the ground, got his goal when everyone was joining in the spoils, he got his goal. The one for me is a toss-up, and I know Fritsch has kicked six, but I'm tempted to slide Oliver in.
I'm three Petrarca, two Fritsch, and one Treloar. I don't know how he stacks up against Oliver and Salem necessarily, but he lived his end of the bargain. Thanks for the means test throughout the year, Kingy.
Been great, G.
That's a little collector's item.